Well, hello, friends. This is your old pal, Hardy White, just sitting here on the porch picking my guitar. They say, oh, I can't hear it, Hardy. That's because I'm playing my quiet guitar. The strings are made of yarn, and the body is made of steam and cotton. So it's very quiet, and I can play it when people are sleeping, and I won't disturb them, even though I'm feeling like Andy Griffith, and I want to sit on the porch just singing on a warm summer night, just like Andy. Now, I wish Andy Griffith was on my front porch. He'd be sitting there right now, strumming his guitar. Well, not strumming his guitar. We'd have to strap it to him. He's dead. I would not mind having Andy Taylor, in air quotes, Andy Griffith's deceased remains propped up on my porch, just like Jeremy Bentham, the philosopher. Now, he is long dead, but he's at Cambridge, and he's considered a mature and returning student, and he is their only, I think, long dead corpse at the university, and therefore he has been put on some sort of board representing his demographic, which is rotting remains or whatever he is, and a philosopher. He may be their only one. I don't know. But I would be willing to have that version, you know, Andy, on my porch as a sort of symbol saying, hey, there's a dead man on my porch. But look, he's got a guitar, and it's the best of both worlds because he's not playing it. Sometimes I think an acoustic guitar brings the most joy when it's unstrummed or unplayed. It's just sitting there in the corner. That's good feng shui. Sometimes in feng shui, it's just enough to prop up a flute in the corner. Say, that will wind water our troubles away. We don't actually have to play it. Oh my goodness. Go out there. I do a thing called silent busking, where, and I don't even ask for money. So, and I don't even actually go out on the street. So just every time you pass an area and it's very quiet and there's no one there playing music or asking for money, go home and give me some, because that's me. I'm out there silent busking. People ask me, they say, well, first they make a statement and then they question. So I don't want to say people ask me and then make a statement. But they'll say, Hardy, you have been on the radio for years and years and years. That's the statement. And then they'll ask me a question. They'll say, how's it done? Or what's the secret? What's the secret to being on the radio? How you do it? Well, you know, I am reminded of Gertrude Stein on her deathbed. And standing beside her is her longtime partner, Alice B. Toklas. And Alice looks down at Gertrude and says, Gertrude, oh Gertrude, what is the answer? What is the answer? And Gertrude looked up and said, what was the question? And I guess that's what I'm saying is basically I've already forgotten what you've asked, but I'm sure it was a good one. Because if someone's going to take enough time to ask me a question, like, sir, do you have the time? Then they must really need to know. And when they ask me something like, do you have the time? At first I think, are you being literal or figurative? And even if there is no actual literal meaning to that, is there? Do you know what time it is would be the literal question. And I'd say, hammer? I don't know. But what time is it they want a time o' the clock? But if I said, do you have the time? A lot of times people say, are you free? Are you free? And I ask you today, my friends listening there, are you free? Yes, I am free. Then can I ask you to help me move next Sunday? That's just, I'm testing you. So if someone calls you, like a friend, especially one you haven't heard from for a while, and they go, hey, man, what you doing next Saturday? It's a trap. It's a trap, and you're going to show up with the other Admiral Akbars there and to the moving party where you're helping them move. And they say, I wish I had had time to put all my possessions in boxes, but I'm glad so many of you turned out and have big hands. because we're going to be picking up old piles of clothes hangers and stuff like that. And maybe you brought your own garbage bags to help me pack. I don't know. But then we'll put it all in a truck. Did you rent a truck? I couldn't rent a truck, but my friend had an El Camino. So we're going to do that. Let's take the piano over first. We're going to have to make more than one trip. So it's kind of sucks that I'm moving an hour away. But listen, there's pizza. And so that's going to make, that's up for it. And also fellowship, moving parties, you know that. Listen, this radio is not a moving party. This radio show, I should say. The radio is a sort of party. All radios are parties. They used to do that back in the day before they had, I don't know how they would listen to music. Sometimes they just put on the radio. You see the old movies and they're dancing in the radio. There's a dance party. We interrupt this program to make the following announcements. There has been, and then something terrible has happened. The blob has landed. And then, all right, now back to our regular scheduling program. So that used to happen a lot of times. They'd say, I don't like that because we're right in the middle of a good number. And boom, the war. So you don't want that to happen. Oh, my goodness. So it's great to have sometimes, just like Andy on your, Andy, dead Andy on your porch. Oh, dead Andy. The Andy, the FMU Andy Beekman is going to think I mean him. I don't mean him. He wrote for either the Monkees or Monk. I can't remember which one it was. I close my eyes, I see Tony Shabuba in a knit cap running on the beach. And I don't know what I'm seeing. I don't know a lot about television. And I don't think I can. I've written to the television. Dear television, I've been watching your programs for a long time and I feel like they've contributed to my mental illness. Is there a way to get free cereal? Because I noticed y'all, television, y'all, have been obsessed with selling me cereal for a very long time. Not so much anymore, but boy, you were coming on hard there for a while. You've got to have the cereal. And then you put athletes on the Wheaties. Then, now you're going to think I'm making this up. Then a few years ago, they started putting athletes on Fruity Pebbles. Now I'm thinking, boy, that's, I don't know, if I was a world-class athlete, so I guess, you know, I've got big news, big. What is it? My manager, Phil Silvers, you're going to be on the cereal box and in the diving. And you go, oh, it's, I'm going to be on the Wheaties box. That's every kid's dream. And, of course, it's not. It ends up being Fruity Pebbles. But you know that Barney Rubel. Little Russian fella, and he was a sidekick. Now, he's supposed to be Art Carney. Now, the first season, they spelled it like Carney, New Jersey. Isn't that funny? And then they were like, oh, people call him Art Carney. I go, I don't think so, but whatever. And everything is all mixed up. So television is actually very complicated, unlike radio, at which you are listening. And you will find that sometimes radio is in many ways more polished and sophisticated than television. Now, on television, a lot of, excuse me, hit the mic with my teeth. One of my teeth came out. But as long as I need to, maybe if there was something. The polished nature of radio, I think, because that's so slick. People go, I can't go into radio. I can't go into radio because I will go poor and die because it's not a thing anymore. Listen, kids, when I was young, I would sit by my radio or my crystal. I had a crystal set. And that was before radios. Well, they had radios when you were young. That's true, but not everybody could afford one. And so I paid like $1 million for an antique crystal set, which was stupid now thinking back. And I got one station. But I remember what was on that station. It was Dr. Demento. And I'd listen to him and I'd say, this doesn't sound right. I wonder if there's something else on. And he said, I'm going to play funny songs. And then his voice went on, and I thought, wow, I wonder how long I can listen to that. And then I discovered, you know, static and number stations and other beautiful things about radio. And I thought, this is, I like this avant-garde art station that just goes 1, 3, 3, 8, 7. See, that's my idea of broadcasting and say, oh, no, man, I like Gene Shepherd or whatever you've been listening to. Bless your hearts, that's fine. It's not for all of us. Some of us want something a little more, not experimental, because I want to be there when the experiment's done and it's successful and you're giving me the results that you know are safe and delicious. So I want something that's the result of experiments, right? Like, for instance, Frankenstein is not experimental. He's the result of an experimental process. Is he a failure? I don't think that's fair. I don't know whether Frankenstein's monster, you say monster too, that's in quotes, whether that's even fair. They're all back then, everybody was a monster. And everybody was named Frankenstein, which is just German for a completely honest mountain. And I think that's, you know, just something we forget because lost in history. But it's radio that creates this kind of informing, I should say, or teaching intimacy. Right? It's almost like having a tutor that's got his face right next to your ear. Like this. Hey, man, did you do your homework? Like that. I feel your breath on my neck, tutor. Yeah. And radio. But that's, I mean, some people like that. I put my radio across the room for that reason, and I don't use headphones. Boy, I would like to, another thing that radio is good for is telling you about your long, weird dream. No, I'm not going to do that. That's for your work coworkers to do, not for me. That's something you'd have nothing to talk to about around the water cooler. Man, I had the most messed up dream last night. Let me tell you it in excruciating detail. Are you sure it's not just interesting to you? No, pretty sure it's got to be universally interesting because I'm interesting to myself. Well, no, I'm not going to do that, but I'll tell you what, another thing that a radio is good for is telling you about, like, a trip you went on to New York. Did you go on a trip to New York? I did. I went up to New York City and New Jersey. Did you? Yes. Let me tell you all about it. First of all, I drove there in a car. And the wonderful thing about driving there in a car is occasionally you get to stop and use all different restrooms. And here's the thing that fascinates me. Now, everybody has to use the potty. There's nobody that doesn't use the potty. And every bathroom I go in seems surprised that people are there and using it, or that it would have to be cleaned regularly, or the design of things. It just always seems like, oh, yeah. People need to poo and pee. And I guess it'll be messy or smell. But then they sort of like always, it feels to me like they'd be able to master this technology and we'd be, now I hate to tell you Americans, but if, elsewhere they got it going on a little better. But it's so strange here that maybe we just like it. I think in America we just, there's something about the spray of urine on your feet or something, and just the odor. It's the odor of progress because it lets you know some people are making it and some people aren't. So when I smell someone else's waste, I know, hey, that's not me, or something. I don't really know. I'm trying to make sense of it all. But, yeah, it would be nice if the potties were nicer. That's just me, though. And you can hold it a long weekend, but it's very bad for you. It's very bad for you. Another thing I noticed is, what did I notice? I don't think I noticed enough. I kind of zone out on the highway. I wasn't driving, you know, so I was struggling to stay awake. And I was telling myself, the driver thinks you're interesting. you're helping them stay awake, but I don't think that's the case. I don't really know. And, you know, because he kept trying to, he wouldn't take his eyes off the road, thank God, but he was trying to punch me hard in the head the whole time. So it was kind of easy to dodge. I would put the seat back. But then we got there. Now, he had to, the driver had to run an errand in, had to drop something off in Hell's Kitchen. It wasn't drugs or anything. So we got to go through the Lincoln Tunnel. Now, I can't even imagine what Lincoln went through digging that damn thing. Good God. Then once he got, I don't know, have you ever done a home project? So you get it done, like your bathroom. Say, I got all the demo done now. And then when this comes up in a tunnel, you about tear your hair out. You go, now I got to tile it. And I don't know if you've ever done tiling, but on a sort of vaulted ceiling like that or whatever. So this tunnel, every time, I sound like with that Andy Griffith, the corpse from my porch, used to do these routines where he was such a hick he'd never seen even football. He said, what it was football. You know how they make out the Beverly Hillbillies to be so unsophisticated. I'd never seen nothing that never was done. And that's kind of how sometimes I tell stories like that. I've been in a tunnel, but I'd actually never been in the Lincoln Tunnel. I've been over the George Washington Bridge. I've been through the Holland Tunnel. But the Lincoln Tunnel, it's a different one. And it's got a chin beard. That's how you know the difference. I found it, I got out and walked around and met other people who lived there. And it was nice. And then we moved on. Then we had to get going again. And then you get into the city at night. And you know, it's underrated driving around I don't want to drive around the city at night, but riding in a car, not a cab. Just someone's car. At night, it's very lovely. It's sort of nice. And you got to be careful what you yell out the window, because sometimes you come up to a stoplight and you go, uh-oh, it's not like at home, where you can just yell, nice hat, idiot, and you've got a whole nice stretch along country road. But here, not that I would do that. That's something that's more directed at me. My friend took a picture of the big Oculus station, and somebody mocked him, said, that's a stupid picture. And my friend was hurt mad. You know, you get hurt mad when somebody criticizes you. I do. Oh, my goodness. You know, I try to take criticism. And the best exercise is trying to accept criticism you didn't ask for or want or need. And then you say, well, how can I process this? And without getting mad or hurt. And one way I do it is hum really loudly. So let's say you come up to me and say, let me tell you something about what you did that I don't like, Hardy. And I'd say, okay, go ahead. And you go, well, and I go, humming is one of those things, if you do it too loudly, I feel like you're going to bust a vessel. Have you ever, you can only hum so loud, and then I think your face tears away like Dizzy Gillespie. The skin just pops off the skull. They told him don't literally blow Dizzy. Do you know Dizzy Gillespie? He played the trumpet. Was it a really trumpet? It was like a flugel. It wasn't a flugelhorn. I don't know. It was weird. But he played this thing. Cornet? No, that's Louis Armstrong. Anyway, played his trumpet, and he would puff up his cheeks, and you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to just do that. But he'd fill his face with air. Anyway, he did it so much, all the skin came away from his skull, and it would go, when he blew, and then it would just be a big balloon head like that. And sometimes, if he was really into it, he would float up to the ceiling. What are you describing? Hard bop. And then he'd take a breath and come. Also, a lot of them can do what they call circular breathing. What's that? Well, that's when you are breathing, you're breathing and blowing, you're blowing and sucking at the same time. Like the show. You say, how is that possible? Have you listened? So I'm doing basically say, oh, your show blows and sucks. No, my show circular breathes because it's a sort of jazz. Don't you understand what you're hearing? Oh my goodness. It's not word jazz. It's not like Ken Nordine or something like that, word jazz.
It isn't?
No, it's not.
Why?
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 Why isn't it? Why isn't it word jazz? Why? I don't know. It's not, though. Well, it's more like, what is it? Word folk? I'm trying to think of a genre it is. It's not it wouldn't be any of the 5,800 metal subgenres. Those are hard to keep track of. And then I don't think it's folk. It could be word Americana, because I don't know what that is. So maybe it's that. I don't know. What's a good thing? What's like jazz? Oh, I like choro, which is that old Brazilian kind of music. I don't know. I'm going to think about it for a while. I know that I'm using words. I've been told I am. And say, Hardy, you should use more specific ones. Because what happens is, sometimes my mind wanders like a dirty diapered child that hasn't been supervised. And say, he was out on the street. Oh, no. First of all, he's an adult cartoon character and not really a child. And he's pulling this stuff again by wearing the diapers. And look, he's smoking a cigar. I wish there were more like little gangster babies like that. There was a whole movie, and I told a friend about it, and they didn't believe me. And that, because we were talking about Jodie Foster. And she was in this movie, I believe, as a kid, where they're all little gangsters. Bugsy Malone, was that what it's called? Bugsy Siegel is a real person. Siegel Malone. Jonathan Livingston. Bugsy Siegel. Or something. But they're all kids, and I don't know whether they're actually smoking cigar and taking heroin, but they're pretending to be the little gangsters, like from, you know, Shy, La, Shy, like from the 30s and everything, like Edward Robinson. Nah, nah. Edward Robinson, like if I was going to do jazz, I would just make that noise, would be my word jazz noise. Like such, nah, nah. I'm going to join a band, and I'm going to play meta impression sounds. What's that? Well, there used to be some stock celebrity characters that people impressionists like in the 70s and we would do impressions of. So you had your Nixon, your Edward G. Robinson, your John Wayne, stuff like that, Humphrey Bogart, and stuff like that, Cary Grant. Now, a very famous Cary Grant impression would be George Goober Lindsay from the Andy Griffith Show. I'm bringing up Andy again. So when Goober, they'd say, Gomer would say, this is my cousin, Goober. This is how you introduce something. If you're ever pitching something for like a show or something, you're talking to people in the entertainment industry, this is how it's done. So you would say, you'd go up to the agent or the producer and you would say, this is my cousin, Goober. Goober. Take off on Cary Grant. And then Goober goes, G-G-G. G-G-G. And then you say, take off on Edward Robinson. And he goes, all right, you guys, all right, you guys, like that. Now, that's not quite meta enough for me. That's just a bad impressions. So I would say if you're going to reduce it to a sound, that would be it sounds like a bleating goat, but it's Edward G. Robinson. And that's Nixon. That's John Wayne. And now you can incorporate those, and then you have Welcome to the Symphony of the Animals, like that or something. I remember going to that as a kid, and they'd say each instrument is an animal. And it's like, oh, it's the animal That's how they sound when they're gassy or something, but that clarinet does not sound like whatever you're telling me it is. Fox. I don't know. I don't remember. But I believe it's Carnival and the Animals, is it? This is why I can't go to France. I have been asked not to come back to France because of my pronunciation of the word squirrel. Also frog. And they say until you can actually say those words, then you can't come back. And I'll tell you why. Because I was staying at the Squirrel and Frog. And there's just no way I can get to my hotel until I master the language. And I'm doing those apps or something like, bling, bling, you have 3 gold coins because you said you know what apple is in Portuguese. I don't, though. Now, the next day, I have forgotten. I tried doing that. I took some German in high school. And so I figured, well, I know a little bit of German. I could certainly, I can do the 99 Luftballons intro. So I know a little German and been to Germany. And so I thought I'll do the app on the phone. I'm like, then now I'll be fluent and I'll be, you know, able to, if they make a movie again about the Comedy Harmonists, I can be in it. So I, the Comedian Harmonists. So I started this app, and after a week, 2 weeks, I had forgotten all my college German. So I don't know how that works, but it's just, it systematically helps you forget. And I don't know whether there's any kind of key to really doing it. I think it would be talking to people. See, they're trying to get people out of the equation. So you don't need people for language. And I'm thinking, well, that's the whole point. I thought the language was so I could talk to other people. Nah. Well, no, that's what it's for. Nah. It is, though. That's what language is for. You can communicate to other people. The machines are making you think that language is the thing and that it's for them or something to speak to the robots. And I'm thinking maybe we need to do one the robots can't understand. Right? So you robot looking AI robot coming to Hardy White to feed. So you're going to eat all my word babies and then you're going to talk like me, right? So why don't I start feeding you things that aren't words? Go ahead, make a show out of that. Recycle that. Go ahead, do it. I know you're switching channels, but I'm telling you, the future requires you to be a lot more chaotic than you are right now. I think the future requires you to embrace a certain absurdity because you are better able to live within that. You can, we can carnival the robots away, I think. I think that the sideshow is something that we have that can't be, that's sort of our secret language of our culture. And I would love to embrace that more. Look at me. Am I a freak? Oh, yes, yes, I am. So all the freaks knew and loved one another and supported one another. It's hard to get an attitude, you know, when you've got like another head coming out of your arm, you know, and you say, well, you know, I don't think you're one to talk. guy with his mouth sewed shut. So I think that, you know, I'm happy to be part of that kind of community, and I wish we were more a community. I love seeing my friends. Oh my goodness. Go up there to New York and I don't see all my friends. I see some of them, and I mainly see new friends, and they're not really friends. They're just people I'm riding with on the PATH train or the subway. And why do I say we're friends? Because we got along, we cooperated, we rode together all that time, trapped in that darn thing for 5 minutes, and then out. I also been getting on the wrong train back to Jersey City for over 10 years now. So I won't go into the details, but I didn't know that you could just, I knew you could just go exchange place to World Trade. But then I kept going back World Trade through like Hoboken and had to go with all those stops, Grove Street and everything before getting to exchange place. Hey, your show's getting a little too Jersey City specific. Jersey City, my friend, is a metaphor for the rest of the world. I'm talking about New Jersey, but if you listen closely, I'm really talking about the human heart, right? Because it has so much in common, you know, especially the fatty parts that don't work. And I didn't see those in New York. I saw a lot of wealthy people. Because I was in a hotel, you know, so you're where the fancy people tend to work. And they're going to and from, I guess, fancy jobs. And I'm not experienced. I don't know what you would do. I've been in an office before, but as an office boy. And I've been one of those adult office boys. And I don't mind doing that. I mean, for a long time, I was like, you know, Harvey Pekar was a file clerk. I'm a file clerk. And then it dawned on me, had all those comic books like written by R. Crumb and all. And I was like, oh, it's a lot easier to be a file clerk when every once in a while you can go on David Letterman. And so, but I was one of the kind of the file clerk and I'm retired from file clerking. Thank goodness, because my fingers just do not work anymore that way. But I didn't get to go on a lot of talk shows. I don't mind that. I don't have really the kind of colon that's good for television or television appearances. If you said right now, hey, we're going to, we just got a call from Carson or, not Carson. Who's the one after that? Steve Allen. Got a call from, no, he's before Carson. Jack Parr. No, wait a minute. Anyway, one of those. Jack Parr calls. He wants you to be on the Tonight Show. So badly, he's weeping about it. Jack Parr is in tears on his head. I wish Harley White was on my show. And say, well, I'll be on it, but like it makes me so nervous. I think I'm going to need a lot of bathroom trips and everything like that. I don't know whether I can continue to move firm stools if I'm the pressure of television. And it's not the exposure. It's not all these people seeing me. It's being on the radar of zillionaire corporations. I just don't want that. Because they go, is this guy making us money or not? I don't want that. Don't look at me like that. Don't look at me that way. I like to be thought to be, you know, invisible or just something that you forget. Oh, I forgot you were there, Hardy. Oh, don't worry about it. It used to happen at restaurants. I've done things to change it, but it used to happen at restaurants that if I was with a group of people, they'd forget my order. So, did you want anything? Now, always. It happened for a long time. I was starting to really get my feelings hurt. And I'm like, wow, I'm invisible. You know what? And then you think, oh, I'm going to steal a wallet. And then the minute you do that, you're recognized like you're in the Avengers. So I'm not going to try to be anyway. I'm just going to sort of float through life, I think. I'm going to be like a song. And you know, I was strummed into existence by a cosmic Andy Griffith show person, Andy Taylor, Sheriff Andy Taylor. Sheriff, is he Sheriff Andy Taylor? Yeah, it's Sheriff Andy Taylor, not the police chief. They don't have a police force. That's what I want to see. So here, I did this pitch. I said, Andy Griffith show, updated. All right, Sheriff Taylor. All right. Deputy Sheriff Barney Fife, bop, 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 going around. Now, I assume that perhaps they're affiliated with the county. But then the city of Mayberry decides, we want a police force. I'm tired of these guys dressed in beige. We want some people in blue or black. you know, with a baton. Baton avec thing on the side, like, so it's kung fu. So we want that. We want them walking around like that, maybe twirling the baton, going, ha, 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 I got a pension, like that. I'm going to get a pension. So I'm on the farce. Your quote, that's from Salesman. I think so. So then they do that. This is a very bad pitch. I'm going to back it up. Andy Griffith Show, the sheriff's department gets some competition because the city wants a police force. So then you've got two competing law enforcement agencies. I'm sure this has happened in your town. You got the county. You got White County Sheriff's Department. You got the City of Hardy Police Department. Sometimes they show up at the same crime, and it might go a little something like this. Hey, what are you doing? I haven't worked it out yet. You don't have to do that for the pitch. It's shorter than that. Then they go, let me think about it. And then if I say yes, I might not green light it. I might amber light it with a green gel. Mm-hmm. And then you could just do me like a treatment. Do something. Don't write the full script. Write me up some story ideas, okay? How would this go? I'm wondering now because I'm intrigued. So it would be Sheriff Andy Town. Who's the police chief? Is it somebody? Maybe it's just, it's Opie. Opie is going to be the police chief. Andy's the sheriff. They bump heads. And then little Leon, is his name Leon? Who is real life brother Clint Howard. Well, they wouldn't be in it. It wouldn't be the Howards. They're 150 years old combined. No, it wouldn't have to be. Have to be somebody. It would have to be fresh actors. So I don't know if we've got any actors today milking the, you know, the southern kind of bumpkin thing. I don't know if anybody does that act anymore. Hardy? I'm not. I don't do that. What it was football. I know what football is. I know what soccer is. I can call soccer football if I'm in the right place. I know what it was cricket. And, you know, and I know what's going on in a cricket match. What are other some sports I know about? I've watched the Olympics, so I know the difference between curling and eye poking, which they don't have. They will have it, though. They had breakdancing, and so I think they might have other art things. Shadow puppets next year, or does it have to be something more physical? I'm for the dancing, you know, because I think clowning or voguing or something like that. Clowning the dancing, not actual clowning. Oh, my gosh. No, I think all kinds of hip-hop dance should be in it. Jazz hands. Is that a whole event? I don't know. But I would love to. I would also love to what they call medal in something. And that is to get a medal. And I don't know how that would. I don't know how that would look. I'm not coordinated or athletic, but there's got to be a sport for everybody. And you know, it's not radio. You know, you could do something with the mic, throw the mic, hit someone with the mic or something. I don't want to hit anybody, but we'd have pads. They have, like, you know, when they do martial arts, you take, oh, I don't want to hit somebody with a real sword, but I wouldn't mind, like, taking a piece of rattan and wrapping it up in a duvet and then whacking somebody in the head who's got like a beekeeper helmet on. I'd totally do that because I don't think anybody'd get hurt. They have those things where you dress like the Michigan Man and then they sick a dog on you. Bite them in the crotch. And then that's how they teach dogs to attack mascots of different companies. So you'll see Gritty's always got a vicious dog hanging from his crotch. You'll see just clamped there. And it doesn't, I don't know that it hurts the performer, But that's a lot of the dogs they train for that. It's just be hanging on those things. He said the Philly Fanatic just had, I said, what's that down there? And it was a bunch of little dogs, little tiny dogs all clamped on. And I don't know if it helps for the performance or it might. Oh, I've had to wear one of those costumes before because I did some professional clowning at a putt-putt, and it wasn't enough. You know, so the putt-putt has the corporation, Incorporated TM, has their own trademark clown design and everything. So I was that. But the local franchise owner was like, I came up with putt-putt puppy. And it was a big dog furry costume. And I put it on once. And then I was like, no more. Because this is absolutely identical to something that I saw in Carcassonne, France, in the torture museum. And they would put this on people, Cathars, and say, you must convert to Christianity, or I will put that doggy head on you, the unventilated doggy head. Oh, it smells like armband. I can't breathe. You know, submit. Hand out these coupons. And that's how they would say, no, I'd rather be Christian. And then they'd take a, okay, that's not enough, though. And they'd kill you. But that didn't happen. That didn't happen at my place. But somebody else, I said, I quit. Someone else has to do this. I can't do this. I'm not positive it's working as a marketing thing, too. I've never really believed that works. Although maybe from a pity angle. If I walked by a store and I saw, oh, God, who's in that gorilla costume? Oh, no. And I'd go by there with all my union information. And I'd say, I'd be like, brother, sister, it doesn't have to be like this. You know, organize. Don't have to do this. I think sometimes it's enough to just, I think makeup is sufficient. Because I was over there, I have this, all this argument with my friends all the time. They go, no or kabuki, no or kabuki. And I was like, well, the no masks are good. I love it, you know, and they don't show any expression or anything. But I don't know. You can't beat face paint. And we got Halloween coming up. And I was like, what am I going to paint my face as? And I don't know. If I was going to go truly, 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 truly strange, I would make my whole face look like the people that get like a skull tattooed on their face. Like I'd fake tattoo my whole face. And then over that, put cover up. Like they do when they make all the face and make it disappear. But it's still under there. See? So my costume is person with completely tattooed face and head wearing concealer. And I go, you didn't do anything this year for costume, Hardy. And I'd be like, if you only knew, look deeper. You got to look deeper. And people walking around all the time, you think, they're not wearing a costume. They're not in character. Oh, I'm not sure that's true. Gosh, we are all fragile creatures walking around wishing that we looked a little different or appeared different to one another, that our language was mistaken for jazz, that all our movements were mistaken for dance, and that we looked absolutely at home in the world, that everything you said made sense, that every person you encountered cared or vibed with you. Oh, what a world. I see skies of sky, and I say there's a sky. Is it blue? Not today, for today it is gray. The rain tastes funny, like maybe it is bad. It's gone bad. Does the rain go bad? I don't know. It does if you sit Have you cleaned your cistern, my friends? When the rains of inspiration come down upon you, or the rains of hard times, and they accumulate in the cistern of your memories, have you cleaned it, or is there something dead in there that's going to taint everything? You need to keep that clean so when the new experience comes in, all the new feelings, that there's not some kind of rotten corpse of your past disappointments. Pull that out of there. You don't need that anymore. You are a fresh human. And we're going to be dealing with clear water from the sky. It doesn't fall from the sky tainted. It gets there by the fruit of another thing that has fallen in there and tainted it. I don't know. I'm partially getting some of that from Squeeze, and some of it not. I like to go. My idea of a time machine is just taking lots of drugs and putting a 90s playlist on the Spotify. No, that's not true. My idea of a time machine is a literal time machine that I have. And occasionally it works. And occasionally it phases in and out of existence. And I really don't know why this is happening. When I first started the show. A couple of years in, I acquired a time machine, started traveling it. Started documenting my trips on the radio. And then it stopped working. And then every once in a while I'd check on it and it wasn't there. Or just part of it was there. Or just the room and all the innards were gone. I mean, this has happened over and over again. And I'm thinking, is the future popping in and out of existence? Is the place where this came from, if it can't decide whether it exists or not? And that makes me think that maybe we're still in a stage of composing. I don't know whether that's how it really works, but if we are still writing this thing and writing the future, oh my gosh, I think we should write some joy into it. I think we should write some wonderfulness in it. You know what that feels like. You may have experienced that in your life. I don't know when it was. Probably wasn't at your fifth birthday party. Mine was, I don't know, it should have been perfect. Everybody had pirate hats on. They weren't real hats. They were cardboard. Used to be able to buy like a themed birthday party for a child with all the decorations and then things to put on the children. But they were, you know, they're just cardboard. It wasn't a real hat. But as a kid who really liked dressing up or acting, the idea that you would put an inauthentic cardboard pirate hat on me and then the identical one as if we were some sort of crew of captains was so deeply offensive to me. I said, like, I can see it's my special day. Get me a real damn tri-corner hat or one of those Captain Crunch-looking captain's hats. Put headscarves on the rest of these nuts and make me just, I'm the pirate captain for the day. I'll hand out booty. I'm handing out booty. And I'll hand them out like party crackers and stuff like that. But this idea that we're all some sort of generic pirate and, I mean, the birthday kid isn't special or whatever. Ugh. Ugh. And I still have the picture. It's a Polaroid. I've seen since it was taken, right? There was no delay. You know, my mother took it and says, here it is. Look at everybody's there. And you go, oh gosh, I wonder if I'm going to think of one of the names of any of the kids. I wonder if they'll pop into my head. I think one of them was Tabitha Lorenzo or something like that. Tabitha, are you out there? Can't be that many. 62-year-old Tabitha, she was a little younger, 60-year-old Tabitha's, Lorenzo or something like that. And Tommy Myers, you out there, Tommy? Father was a doctor. Any Tommy Myers out there, anybody? No, Gibby, your brother's name's Gibby. Oh, my God, coming to the radio. What? I think he's talking about us. I don't know. So if you were in Morristown, and you were at my party, let me know. Hit me up. I was thinking of recreating it and getting those pirate hats back, and it was just fun. I don't know if we had guns, but probably not. I don't know, little swords, not even that. When I was at the Barker Cartoon Toy Museum there in Chelsea, Connecticut, a couple weeks ago, I saw, not only did I see my Lancelot Ling lunchbox, which I'm still buzzing about, but I also saw my, and these are not rare, my Casper, my plastic Casper the Ghost mask, which was my very first costume. And they give you, like, the white Casper. The costumes used to be interesting because instead of making it like a costume, so if you're going to make a pirate or a ghost back in the day, all right, you'd think like, oh, you make the costume look like a ghost or a pirate. But what you really do is you give them this thing to put on, this, like, smock. And then the smock has printed on front of it like a picture of what it's supposed to be, like a pirate head that says pirate show or something like that. Or, you know, Casper's face. Like, I just don't understand that part. So they weren't realistic, and that used to drive me nuts. It's like, well, they've got the face part, kind of, right? Those the plastic ones that they don't go all the way over your head. Those rubber masks, they came later. That feels like more of a Nixon. Maybe a 70s thing. But they had these plastic things with little eye holes cut out and a little slit that you could just stick your tongue enough in to cut it. And then Casper. And then I think on my chest it said Casper in case anybody was wondering what I was supposed to be. And I saw that in the museum. And I said to the docent, I said, that was my first costume. That was my first mask. And he said, I don't think you said anything. Because I don't know. How do you respond to that? Really? Oh, okay. That's what I would have said if I was him. All right. Okay. I think it was much nicer than that. Really lovely person. So I had a great experience. I think that's it. I think you should make a special trip there. And it's the most extensive vintage toy collection in all in one place I've ever seen in my life. That all that TV and movie memorabilia is pretty idiosyncratic. It's not comprehensive, you know. It's what these folks liked, but boy, as far as like Popeye stuff, never seen so much Popeye stuff. And Welcome Back, Kotter is really overrepresented. So if you're like me and you think that that's a plus, then I would head on out for this museum. Oh my goodness, I feel like I was just up there seeing y'all. I saw some new friends, I saw three old friends, and it was a lot of fun. I love going up to Jersey City. I was in that darn old Monty Hall, and there's nothing I like better than going downstairs in the basement of Monty Hall and taking about a quarter inch of skin off the top of my head by bumping it, which I do every year, knowing that it is really not designed for someone of my, I like to say, stature. But probably just, I'm just tall enough and blind enough that I just can't see. I'm not blind. I'm awful. I didn't mean to say that. But my vision's not great. And I bump into things quite a bit, and head-wise especially. So I'm always taking lots of skin, and I think I'm just down to the bone there, and that's possible. You can do that, and it's kind of neat. It's kind of cool looking. I like to frighten children with it. So, you know, it's bone skull head, and I'll scratch. It's chalky bone, and I'll scratch the chalky bone in this. The white bone dust will come off and the kids will scream. And you can see like the little fontanelle seam there where my skull came together. And what do you mean? Well, you know, when it comes up, you come out, your head folds like an origami. Like, did you ever have one of those things in elementary school you make and you go flip, flop, flip, flop, flop, pick a flap, red, or three, one, two, three, pick a flap, four. One, two, three, four. Well, you know that complicated folding thing? And well, the skull is like that, so that when it comes through the birth Lincoln Tunnel, it can fold up, unlike the Target delivery truck in front of us, which looked just a couple inches too big to really comfortably get through any of the entrances to the tunnel. But it did it, and you can do it if you don't mind taking a little, just a thin bit of concrete off the side there, and you can get right through anything if you fold your skull up. And I hope that's what you're doing today. You know, when I listen to you, Hardy, I come off, I'm maybe driving home from work, and it's been hard, and I listen to you, and it just feels like you're taking my head and folding it up, you know, into a little envelope, and I can put my hopes and dreams in there, and my boarding passes, and then put them in one of my many pockets, and then pat myself frantically when it's my turn at the gate. And that's the feeling that you always give me, Hardy. My passport. That's why So I kept my passport when I was traveling recently. I kept my passport in my coat pocket, like, so that I would go, oh my God, my passport. And I kept hitting myself in the chest so hard that I defibrillated myself. And I restarted my heart. I didn't know it had stopped. But that was great. So just keep your passport right there by your heart, and so you can punch yourself in the chest occasionally, just in case. You know, you never know. Preventative medicine. Occasionally, every once in a while, unprovoked, I slap myself in the face very hard and go, snap out of it, Hardy. And then I go, I wasn't doing anything. And it was like, and I'll say, that's for when you are. And it's true, you know, I think the thing I need to be disabused of the most is my thoughts of defeat or, you know, inferiority or failure. I don't need those. Even if they're true, I don't need them. That's what I was thinking the other day. It's like, okay, let's say everything bad about yourself is true. Is it helpful? No. Don't you see people that are confident and you go, I wish I was that self-deluded. Yes, well, you too can be self-deluded. And I'll tell you what, if you start from a point of self-knowledge, I'm not sure it's as bad. You say, well, I have some self-knowledge. I'm not real sure that I'm happy with that. And you go, okay, well, let's just slide the delusion knob up a little bit. And it's not really a delusion knob. What I say it is, it's a romanticism knob. Romanticize your life. You think things aren't important? Just make them important. Say, hey, you know what? I am special. I'm special because I say I'm special. Well, you're not going to do any better. Because if you're trying to get other people to say it, they're also saying it without really much evidence or not because it's true. So just say it. I'm something else. Man, I am so good at radio. I don't want to say I'm the best because I don't want to put anybody else down. But I'll just say, hey, you go, you look at you, Hardy, and that makes me feel a little better. And also, I don't know what I just said, so I'm not sure it was wrong. Oh, bless you. We are reaching the end of our time together, both on the show, on the earth, as human beings. I don't know how old you are. I'm 89. Well, you probably, and my father lived to 118. All right, so I'm going to outlive you, sickly looking. So watch your language. Oh, bless you so much. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU. I'm going to start over again. WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online, WFMU.org worldwide. We are raising some money here and during our Hellraiser, and you've been so helpful so far. We've got some shortfalls, you know. If this thing means anything to you, does it? Yes. That's when we're not doing it the full show, you know, the dunning. We're doing the dunning part of the Krugering. So we're just asking you, if you love me, I don't get anything. All I get out of it is your friendship and your love. So give money to keep that going so that the path to our love and friendship stays open. Because that's what it is. There's no commodity here. We're not exchanging any products, you and I. This is like how humans love each other and I'm thankful for it.
https://wfmu.org. Enter https://wfmu.org into your browser's query field. That's correct. A listener just like yourself. For news and internet just like your own. To sustain this 24-hour transmission, please donate today. https://wfmu.org. One half scroll downward, click the words pledge now. From there I will leave it to the spirit to guide you. Dearest listener, my dear generous intelligent listener, October is come. October is come. The Hellraiser in its sidecar. Donate today. October is come. Breezing like a Harley D down the spiraling thoroughfare we call time. The Hellraiser in its sidecar. Palms outstretched in the crisp autumn air, careening into the ever earlier sunset. Please donate today. https://wfmu.org. Enter. https://wfmu.org. Into your browser's query field. That's correct. A listener just like yourself. Can use an internet just like your own. To sustain this 24-hour transmission, please donate today. https://wfmu.org. One half scroll downward, click the words pledge now. From there I will leave it to the spirit to guide you.
Oh. always seems so very small, 'cause nothing even matters at all. Seems nothing even matters. Seems nothing even matters at all. Nothing even matters. Nothing even matters at all.
Your love makes me feel 10 feet tall. Without it, I go through withdrawal. 'Cause nothing even matters at all. Nothing even matters. Nothing even matters at all. Nothing even matters. Nothing
even matters. These buildings could drift out to sea. Some natural catastrophe. Still there's no place I'd rather be. 'Cause nothing even matters to me. See, nothing even matters. See, nothing even matters to me. Nothing even matters. Nothing even matters. Nothing
even matters. I sometimes have a tendency to look at you religiously, babe. 'Cause nothing even matters to me. Nothing even matters. Nothing even matters to me. Sit it down, baby, baby.
Oh. Now you won't find me at no store. I have no time. Manicures with you is never either. 'Cause nothing even matters no more. See nothing, it don't matter. See nothing even matters no more. Nothing even matters. Nothing even matters.
Now I'm watching the storm. That's my fault, my fault, fault. 'Cause nothing even matters no more. Nothing even matters. Nothing even matters. Nothing even matters. Oh, oh, oh.
Baby,